You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Oh no, Beard just made a very upset face. Very cheesy show after we figure out what the hell just happened to Beards.
The computer mouse and I are feuding today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nothing like that. Like,
I went left and it went right. Literally, that's what it just did.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Whenever you occasionally hear anger in Beards' voice, it's because he's at war with equipment his own age.
On ESPN Kansas City.
If you're just joining us, as many of you are, either by podcast form or by Facebook Live, which now says it's been interrupted, but it also says two people are watching. Man, in real time right now, it is 4:26. In the first 26 minutes of this show, everything went wrong on the production side. Not Beards' fault. All the equipment around him. He was captaining a ship with just like beach ball-sized holes in the hull.
The ship was A, on fire, B, getting invaded by pirates, C, had the Kraken trying to bring it down around it, and D, it also just got hit by lightning, E, it was also on a mountain.
Also, what were we at? What letter were we at?
That was E.
F, it was running Windows XP.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. There are F reasons that the first 26 minutes of this show is a hellscape for Beards.
Also, the frame rate on the live stream is at about 5. I will try and fix that.
Well, the exciting thing is over on the Facebook Live page, over on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ESPN Kansas City, we have a Beards cam. We have a permanent Beards cam. Where Beards got a new camera. It's the same camera that I have. We both have these fancy nice little webcams now. And there is a constant Beards cam, which is his idea. Which, by the way, Beards, very like me move, suggesting that you be on screen the whole show. I literally hadn't considered that as an option. I genuinely think it was a great idea. And also, such a move that I would pull.
It was really because, like, the way I have this software set up over here, the way we could do it was it would be more like a television broadcast where,
sure,
you know, switch between you, switch between me, switch between you whenever one of us is talking. And I would just kind of forget to switch to me whenever I was talking.
Yeah.
It would kind of be weird.
Yeah, sure.
Just because it was like I was doing two other or three other things over here at the same time. So I was just like, why not just stick that on there all the time? And then, boom, problem solved.
It's a great solution that also centers around you being on screen constantly. Again, that is not a criticism. That is exactly how I solve problems. It's how can I solve this problem while also having more people see my face? It's brilliant. It's perfect. It's completely on brand. So we're working on that right now, figuring out why it's breaking down. But that's something to look forward to over on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page. Throughout the show today, later on, we're going to talk about the KU-Mizzou game. We'll do that at 5. We have 30 minutes now of the shambles of the show that has existed so far to talk about the Chiefs and the NFL action happened over this weekend. In case you weren't aware, a week from tonight, the Chiefs and Broncos are playing in Arrowhead. Chiefs have another primetime game, play Thursday night, then Monday night, the longest week you can have without a bye week. It's all good for the Chiefs. The Chiefs are now 5-2. At the same mark as the Steelers and the Patriots in the AFC, an AFC that was completely out of hand 2 weeks ago is now stuck in the muck with the two teams you expected and then the one team you hope would be there if you're a Chiefs fan. But what we saw this weekend from the Broncos was awesome. Not just because, you know, chuckled the Broncos heartily, but because it's good news for the Chiefs' next opponent. The Chargers, at home in Los Angeles, beat the Broncos 21-0. It was the Broncos' first shutout in, I think, 25 years, which is incredible. The Chargers were dominant, and the Broncos had lots and lots and lots of problems. My favorite kind of problems are Broncos problems. Trevor Siemian was not good. The defense could only hold up so well. There were problems galore in Denver. I guess in L.A. for Denver. C.J. Anderson led the team with 44 rushing yards on the ground. Trevor Siemian threw 35 passes, completed 25 of them for just over 200 yards, and threw a pick. Their special teams got beat by Travis Benjamin. Pouring on a little bit. One more thing. Here's the Broncos' offense on Sunday. Fumble, punt, 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 fumble, punt, 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 interception, turnover on downs. So now, in their last four games, the Denver Broncos, the apparent worst team in the AFC West, which actually I had in the preseason, believe it or not, the worst team in the AFC West, the Denver Broncos, have averaged 10.5 points per game over their last four games. They looked good at the front end. They look like a team who could at least win their home games. They're not that. They are, as Dennis Green put it, who we thought they were. Which is great news for the Chiefs, who need to win on Monday night, especially now, because the Broncos look as frail as ever. The Chiefs are as desperate for a win as they've been this season. Desperate is a harsh word, but it's the case. That statement is true. This is the most needy they've been for a win in a while. The difference between a 6-2 team and a 5-3 team that's currently on an 0-3 stretch, I think, is pretty hefty. And also, the news of today, the good news of today for the Chiefs, is that Steven Nelson could be ready to play against the Broncos, according to Andy Reid. Which takes us into our conversation that we sort of started on Friday about the Chiefs. What is going on with the defense, with Bob Sutton, with the personnel? Beards are exasperated, but it's okay because at least we're recording the show now.
Yeah, that's the important part. I might have to restart the stream.
Awesome. That's okay. It's okay, Beards. Beards just got so exasperated that he turned around and put his hat on. What does that even mean?
I need comfort.
I kind of get it. Like, it's like, you know, I want to wear hoodies and jackets and stuff in the fall, even whenever it's not quite justifying that temperature yet. As Beards gets up and turns down the air conditioning in his side of the room.
It's going great over here,
guys. We're having a tough day. But hey, we have a full week of shows this week, so that's exciting.
We actually have a Wet and Wild Wacky Wednesday this
week. We do. It's going to be very exciting. Anyway, Steven Nelson looks like he's going to be ready to come back for Monday, or at least he may be ready. We don't really know for sure, but I don't think Andy Reid would have said he may be ready if he didn't think he would be ready. I think that's Andy Reid actually being conservative. I also saw somewhere that literally, like, he can't be activated until Monday off the pup list, which works out just fine because the Chiefs are playing on a Monday. So we've had this conversation about the defense. We've had this conversation about Bob Sutton. You know, it was the run defense against the Steelers, and again, the defense was not to blame in that game, but it still didn't look great on the run. In the run game. Last week against the Raiders on Thursday, it was the passing game just absolutely shredding the Chiefs secondary. Seth Kizer was going through the all-22 Chiefs defensive film earlier, and he said, I'm 119 yards and two touchdowns, four plays into reviewing the Oakland all-22 defensive film, and every one of them is an execution issue. Saying that it wasn't about the scheme where Sutton was putting these guys or if they're in man or zone or whatever, that the Chiefs were simply having execution issues. Now, I do think it's fair to bring up a question in the realm of, well, if your team is having execution issues, doesn't at least some of that fall on the defensive coordinator? Those are his guys. That's his unit. Aren't you going to look at him to assign some of that blame? I think that's fair. But Seth also pointed out that he's seen Bob Sutton deal with more disciplined players in the past and put out a more disciplined offense. So I think you can split hairs however you wish in that case. But there's another stat that came through that I also found very interesting. The Chiefs give up an average of now 8.1 yards per play when in a nickel package. That's five defensive backs. It's the most common NFL substitution package. That's the worst in the league by a full yard. The Broncos give up 7 yards per play when in the nickel package. Again, five defensive backs. The best in the league is the Steelers. They give up 3.1. The Chiefs give up 5 yards worse than that. 8.1 yards per play. And there's a lot of interesting places here where you can assign the blame, where you can try to figure out what the problem is. The Chiefs have defensive back talent. Marcus Peters is great. Terrence Mitchell is a very good second corner. Ron Parker is a very good, versatile safety. Daniel Sorensen has his moments. Eric Murray and Philip Gaines have really been struggling in the last couple of weeks. Both in coverage and in the run game, one of the places where the Chiefs are getting most shredded in the nickel package is whenever you've got all those defensive backs out there, it makes it a whole lot easier for you to be run on. And this is something we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. And I do wonder what decisions are being made there by Bob Sutton. How do you decide when you're rolling out a nickel package? How do you decide whenever you're trying to slow down the run game? And I think all of it goes back to Sutton's general philosophy. Not to say there aren't execution issues. Bob Sutton's philosophy with proper execution, I think, makes a ton of sense. I want to make that very clear. But with Bob Sutton's philosophy, the bend but don't break defense, as we've gotten so accustomed to calling it, he'd either have a short, a fast but sort of softer defensive package out there whenever it means giving up small chunks, giving yourself a chance to make some plays on the ball. Whenever it's saying, all right, we'll suffer some medium length runs up the gut, but we're not going to get beat deep and we're going to have a chance to make some plays. I think that's what Sutton wants to do all the way up until the 20-yard line. And then once you get inside the 20, everything changes. You start to change what packages are going in and out. You start to maybe put out a little more pressure on the quarterback. You want to bring in your big guys to slow down the run if you're inside the 5. That's whenever the defense succeeds, because it's harder for an offense to succeed whenever they don't have much room to work. Obviously, that wasn't the case against Oakland, but it was a sloppily played game on a short week on the road. I've told you 1,000 times, if there's a place where weird things can happen, that's where it is. If there's a place where weird things were ever going to come through, it was going to be on a short week on the road, Thursday Night Football in Oakland. I told you before the game, remember, I said my confidence level was 51 out of 100. I was picking the Chiefs, but with very little confidence, simply because that's where strange things happen. It seemed like a tired, banged-up defense. But the way that Sutton's defense so often works, is that he will bend and then stop it. I like a more aggressive approach. It's not who Bob Sutton really is. And there have been plenty of times along the way when that's worked out just fine, when that's been the right thing for this team. And I think, as we've talked about the state that the Denver Broncos are in currently, I think that Denver's going to walk into a well-prepared defense this week. Also, Steven Nelson coming back would be huge. I think, and this is, I've been wrong about how the Chiefs have managed defensive backs plenty of times in the past, I've usually felt pretty good about where I've ended up in the whole thing. But I think Steven Nelson immediately takes Philip Gaines' spot as that slot guy if he's ready. And if he's not ready, then it's a slow transition. But assuming that that Steven Nelson is healthy enough to go, and you've got Peters and Mitchell on your outsides, you've got Steven Nelson playing the slot, Philip Gaines becomes one of the others, and you keep hoping that Eric Murray improves, because the Chiefs have really been missing Eric Berry. That was something that came through my mentions a few times this weekend. People saying, well, how do you think the loss of Eric Berry affects this defense? As you go through execution problems, I think Eric Berry is a guy who knows everything that's going on in that defense, and that he can look around and say, hey, do this differently, attack this differently, approach this differently, in a way that I don't know how many other people on that defense can really lock it all down. Also, you look at his actual performance. There were times in the past, early on in his career, where I was critical of Eric Berry, because I thought he was a deep linebacker. He played like a deep linebacker more than he played like an actual safety. Not the case anymore, especially in the Patriots game up against Rob Gronkowski. You saw a perfect example of how good he could be. He was shutting down Rob Gronkowski. And you think back to the Raiders game. I'm not particularly afraid of Jared Cook on a day-to-day basis, but if you just let Eric Berry deal with Jared Cook all day, last Thursday, the Chiefs probably just win that game. And like I said last week, it's really hard to do wins above replacement in the NFL because you've got a very small sample size. You've got 16 games, and you've got a bunch of guys who are always challenging what it means to be a replacement-level player. But Eric Berry was clearly on Thursday night worth a win for the Chiefs. So, it's a difficult pill to swallow as you look at the status of this Chiefs defense currently. It opens up a very obvious wound in the secondary, because Eric Murray is just not, he did not have a good game on Thursday, and that does worry me for the long run. All right, we take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to have Facebook Live, we think. We'll see. I'm talking about the bizarre things going on in the NFL across the board. Talk about the Chiefs' salary cap for next year. Some numbers for that came out. And then also, there are a bunch of other teams that aren't going to sign Colin Kaepernick. That's next.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Listen, so today's show might be bad.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
It might have been. Yeah, it just might have been. Today's show's been really weird, sorry. Let's talk about 2018 for just a second. Is that okay with everybody? Do you mind? I'm going to do it. My show. Jason_OTC over the cab tweeted out a couple days ago, yesterday actually, the team with the least projected cap room for the 2018 NFL season. And the Steelers were number one, the Chiefs number two in least projected cap room. The Chiefs actually have a projected $1.6 million surplus against the cap. So $1.6 million more than they would be allowed to have next year. But Matt Verderam tweeted out that the Chiefs could open up $30 million by moving Alex Smith, Tom Bahali, and Derek Johnson. I think this is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, it shows you how desperate the Chiefs' cap situation is going to be next year. It will play a factor in what the Chiefs do with Alex Smith. It's just going to. It's going to be a part of it. And also, obviously, you know, the Chiefs have invested a bunch of draft capital in Patrick Mahomes. Also, next year, the Chiefs aren't going to have a first-round pick to bolster this team. So next year is going to be mostly this, But currently, this and also less. I would expect the Chiefs to probably part way with Dustin Colquitt. I think that gets you close to something like $35 million. Although, actually, I don't know if Colquitt's actually under contract next season. I'll find that out for you in a second. But it's going to be... Tom Bahali is not going to be here next year. His cap hit to be cut is virtually nothing. And actually, so Colquitt's not under contract next year. So even though he is a almost $5 million hit this year, he just probably won't be back next year. And that's not going to help that huge cap number. But you look at Tom Bahali, it'll be almost nothing to cut him. Derek Johnson's the interesting one that before this season I would have been hesitant on. But he just has not looked the same this entire season. So I very much would also expect him to part ways with the team. Alex Smith, obviously, is the interesting one, where it's the biggest cap hit, biggest cap number that can be moved, and also will be the most controversial. The next 10 games are going to have, and really the games after that are the ones that matter most, it's going to have a huge impact on what the Chiefs end up doing with Alex Smith. But the idea that he could be on the move still is far from solved or far from dismissed. Next year, he'll be a $20.6 million cap hit, the exact same cap hit as Justin Houston, actually. But the Chiefs could save $17 million and still have to spend $3.6 on Alex Smith if they cut him next year. Derek Johnson would be saving $8 million, have to keep paying him $2.25. So there will be a bunch of dead money on next year's cap. Also, D4, by the way, currently counts against the cap. He's an $8.7 million hit, would not cut anything to... would not cost anything to cut him, apparently. He won't be here next year. Not for that. For almost $9 million and to cut him without having to spend a penny on him, D4 will not be a Chief next year. I would be stunned. The interesting conversation that's been had about Alex Smith in a couple of instances is, well, what about an extension? And that's kind of terrifying, I think, for a lot of Chiefs fans who feel like we knew what we were going to see from Alex Smith coming into this year, but then got a nice surprise for a few weeks. Again, there's not going to be an extension signed in Week 10. There's certainly not going to be any urge for the Chiefs to commit themselves sooner than they have to. I thought that was interesting. Something that's kind of fun to have a little refresher course on, because the future of the sport is almost as fun as the thing that gets played on a day-to-day basis for me. I think it's all fun. Carson Palmer was injured this week. He broke his arm, I think, in two places, they said. Anyway, after the game, Bruce Arians said that they're sticking with Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert, and I would just like to say, stop it. You stop it right now, Bruce Arians. It makes me wish that the Cardinals still had David Johnson, because if they still had David Johnson, if they still felt like they had half a chance to contend, they would have to go sign Colin Kaepernick. He's the best available quarterback. He's better than Drew Stanton. Don't ever tell me that Drew Stanton knows that system, and that's why I did it. That's why it matters. That's why he wins. No, stop it. Please stop it. And again, refresher, it matters to me that Colin Kaepernick has a job, because he should have a job. And he's being held out because of his political beliefs. Anyway, that's insane. Jay Cutler has a couple of broken ribs. They're going to go with Matt Moore. Matt Moore makes sense. Matt Moore was almost a starter after Tannehill went down. I feel a whole lot differently about Matt Moore than I do about Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert. That's absurd. It's actually completely insane. Also, a conversation that I saw Matt Verderam started on Twitter. He's just asking, who are the sure things in the NFL at this point? And truly, I don't know. In the AFC, you have the Patriots and the Steelers and the Chiefs. And then a bunch of question marks. I'm guessing the Texans end up with the AFC South. The Titans have really struggled recently. The Texans have looked pretty good with Deshaun Watson, but it's probably either Houston or Tennessee. Even though the Jags have had some stretches, but their quarterback is Blaine Gabbert. I don't think they're going to be able to do enough. The Colts stink. And then the Raiders maybe get a wild card spot. The Bills get a wild card spot. We're coming up on halfway into the season, and I have no idea who half of the teams in the AFC are going to make the playoffs. On the NFC side, the Eagles, Seahawks, Vikings all seem pretty solid. Washington probably gets a wild card spot. The Rams probably get a wild card spot. Then it's the Saints or the Falcons or the Panthers. There's so much we don't know this far into the NFL season. There are like five teams that aren't going to do anything, obviously, and that's it. I mean, that's the entire argument at this point. Who's out of it? Like five teams. Who's locked in? Like five teams. Everything else is still up in the air. By the way, speaking of the Colts, T.Y. Hilton was actually honest after the game yesterday. He since apologized for this, but it drives me bonkers. Jacoby Brissett was sacked 10 times on Sunday. And after the game, T.Y. Hilton said, quote, "It's the offensive line. They need to block."
Duh.
That's my reaction. But whenever a player says that about a unit on his own team, people get upset. People get angry, I guess. That's the kind of thing I'm all about still. That's the kind of thing that always interests me. I'm always happy to indulge. I will always indulge the honest athlete. In fact, somebody on Twitter said, I think yesterday, said I just sort of had a realization that Marcus Peters is refusing to be another cog in the corporate NFL machine. You know what? I like it. It's like, yeah! That! More of that, please! I like that. Even whenever it's like Marshawn Lynch, you know, running on the field to protect an opposing player because they're friends or cousins. We never figured that out, did we? Damn. We had a whole weekend to look into that, and it literally did not cross my mind again until this exact moment. It's a good job by us. We're performing like the equipment in this building. Nice.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.